Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
Welcome back to another episode of Growing Up the Same. I'm your host, Trevon Edwards, joined always by my co-host, Jason Madison. And we have a special guest today, DJ Khalil. What's going on?
What up, man? Thanks for having me. Glad to be on the podcast. Crazy.
Thanks for being on the show. DJ Khalil is a hip-hop music producer and DJ from Los Angeles, California, and the instrumental half of the duo Self Scientific. He's also a part of the group, the New Royales. Khalil, this is the one of the two. You ready?
All right. Yep. Let's do it.
Reason or Ableton?
Oh, man. I have to go with Reason because I think, like, my sound kind of came together using Reason for the most part. Like, Ableton is where I'm at now, but I go back and forth between the two. But I'm a hip-hop producer at heart, so Reason to me for hip-hop is the best, you know, in terms of like what I like my swing, everything about my drums, my sound really, really came together when I got into Reason. Before that, I was on the ASR-10, but my drums were horrible. And then when I got on Reason, it was like, I don't know, I made the jump, and that kind of like changed everything. And then all my biggest records, I want to say, were like basically Reason, you know? So I got to go with Reason.
MPC or ASR-10?
Oh, ASR-10 all day. Yeah, ASR. I mean, ASR is like, it's the ultimate workstation. It was like, you know, like I saved up all my money, my DJ money when I was out, you know, and when I bought it, it changed my life. And then when I look at some of the people that have used it, from Pharrell, Kanye, like Timberland, Jake One, Knots, you know, there's so many producers that used it that are like my favorite. So ASR-10 all day.
Guitar or piano?
I have to go with piano. Piano is just, you know, I don't know. That's a tough one. Because I used to really be into guitar. I love guitar records. Like, I used to buy a lot of guitar records. You know what? I'm going to say guitar. I'm going to go with guitar.
All right.
Yeah.
Indoor hoop or outdoor hoop?
Indoor. Come on, man. You can't play out. No real hoopers, respectable hoopers, like hoop outdoors. Like, nobody. Yeah. Like, indoor all day.
Love and basketball or He Got Game?
He Got Game.
Planet sure. Asia or Razzcast?
Ooh. Damn, you put me on the spot. I'm going to go Asia. I love Raz. Raz, I love you, but I'm going Asia. I'm going Planet Asia.
DJ Muggs or DJ Premier?
Damn. Oh, man. DJ Premier. I love you, Muggs, but DJ Premier.
Alchemist or Hit Boy?
I got to go Al, man. I got to go with Al. I love Hit Boy. Hit Boy is incredible, but Al is like legendary status. Some of my favorite beats ever. You know what I mean? Like, literally, yeah. I still go back to him. You know, keep it thorough. Come on, man.
Man, come on.
So I got to go with Al.
Out, man. Jim Jones or Lloyd Banks?
Lloyd Banks.
Tribe Called Quest or The Clips?
Tribe.
Black on Both Sides or The Documentary?
Black on Both Sides or The Documentary? I'm going Documentary.
ASAP Mob or D12?
ASAP Mob.
Slim Shady LP or The Marshall Mathers LP?
Slim Shady. I'm going Slim Shady LP.
Nice. The home studio. See, that's a tough one, though.
Yeah, it is tough. That's real tough. I had to really think about it. Like, I'll probably change my mind later on, but I'm going to go with Slim Shady right now.
The home studio or a studio?
Home studio all day.
Yeah.
Can't stand big studios, man.
Jay-Z or Nas?
That's tough. I got to say Jay-Z.
The Chronic or 2001?
2001 for me.
Sway or Funk Flex?
Sway.
Rick Rubin or Jimmy Iovine?
Damn. I got to go with Rick Rubin.
Yep. Kobe or Magic?
Kobe all day.
Yeah. Sean Kemp or Dominique Wilkins?
Dominique.
Jokic or David Robinson?
Jokic or David Robinson? People forget how crazy David Robinson was, man. Yeah. I got to go with David Robinson.
He put up 70 in the game one time.
Yeah, Jokic hasn't quite, you know, he hasn't quite proven himself yet. Like David Robinson is proven.
Yeah. Jordan or LeBron?
I'm going Jordan.
As an announcer, Reggie Miller or Chris Webber? Chris Webber.
Reggie Miller. Oh, can't stand Chris Webber. I mean, as an announcer.
As an announcer.
Other than that, he's cool. But he's horrible to listen to. I'm sorry.
Yeah. A high-rise condo in Midtown Manhattan or a two-bedroom house in Hancock Park?
Oh, Hancock Park. Two-bedroom in Hancock Park all day.
A placement on the number one album or a full album with an unknown artist?
A full album with an unknown artist?
Yeah.
That's tough. That's a tough one. I may go with the number one album. And see, the second option depends. It just depends the context, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I'd say the number one album, having a placement on number one album.
A movie placement or a TV jingle?
TV jingle.
Yeah. Above the Rim soundtrack or Dead President soundtrack?
Above the Rim, what?
The best, greatest of all time.
Ridiculous.
Paid in Full or Juice?
Juice.
Boys in the Hood or Menace to Society?
I'm going with Menace on that one.
Paper Soldiers or the Players Club?
Players Club.
Pork or turkey bacon?
Turkey bacon. Oh, it's pork? No way. Get that out of here.
Red velvet cake or sweet potato pie?
Neither. I don't like either one of those, but I'll probably go with sweet potato pie.
The oven or microwave?
Oven.
French fries or a salad?
French fries.
South by Southwest or Art Basel?
I've never been to Art Basel. But I hated South by Southwest. I'm going to say Art Basel because South by Southwest was the worst.
Yeah. What year did you go?
I think I went the year. I just remember being out there with Chase. Me and Chase were out there. He was there with ASAP Rocky and everybody.
Yeah.
And I forgot. That may have been like after his first album dropped. It's fun. I think Rocky was dating what's her name from Australia. That's all I remember.
Iggy.
Yeah, he was with her. So I don't remember what year that was, but it was like right when it started getting real corporate. Like it was, right, you know right. What I mean?
Probably like 2012, 2013, something.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah, exactly. It was like around then. But I was not feeling it. I thought it was like whatever.
Yeah. Christmas or Halloween?
Christmas for sure. I mean, I'm Muslim, but I have kids and my wife is, she's not, you know what I mean? So Christmas is new to me, but it's pretty dope. I like Christmas.
Would you rather be rich with a short career or be all right with a long career?
Rich with a short career. Be all right with a long career. That's tough. Be all right meaning what? Like I'm comfortable.
Have a meal. You got a house. You know what I'm saying. You got food. You cool. But you got like you know what I'm saying. Less than a meal. Everybody knows you. You still long. But or you could have you know what I'm saying. Have let's say 50 mil. And your career is 3 years, but then after that 3 to 5 years, like nobody really wanna, you know what I'm saying?
That's I could go either or, honestly. The short career, I mean, the thing is like the short career, I could still make music and not have to do anything. I could literally just make music all day. You know right. What I mean? So I don't really have to stop making music. It's just like, I'll take the short career and be rich. I'm good with that.
Okay.
I wouldn't stop making music.
Right, right. You make it for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Yeah, that's the one of the two, man.
Small circle, it's a chosen few. I wrote it down and I followed through. I bought a pound and we rode the fuel. I talk shit, but she know it's true. Ocean views, small circles.
All right, we're gonna take a blast from the past and go back and holler at young Khalil. tell me about Khalil's connection to playing AAU basketball.
Okay, yeah. So my dad played in the NBA. I come from a basketball family. And then he coached at UCLA. He coached like Reggie Miller and Pooh Richardson, all those guys from like 85 to 89. So, you know, I grew up playing like, by the time I was in sixth grade, I played with the B&B Spurs, which was like right over here at Queen Anne Park, like mid-city, in the middle of a gangbang neighborhood, all that stuff. But, you know, we had some of the best players out of LA played on this squad. We used to go to Vegas every year. We played in invitational tournaments all the time. So that's really like how I really cut my teeth in terms of like learning the game. My coach was super tough. We had our conditioning was crazy. But like Chris Mills, Doug Meekins, a lot of Dave Fizdale, like my older brother, Jalal, he played there. My younger brother played there. So I played there for years. And then Izzy Washington, rest in peace. I played at Slam and Jam.
Slam and Jam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I played Slam and Jam. And he and my dad were really tight. So, you know, we had like our own squad. Me, my cousins, you know, just friends of the family, whatever. So we had our squad out there. So I played there. And then we played ARC, Rich Goldberg. And Rich, you know, and everybody came from that. Like, everybody played in ARC. My brother, his team was like an all-star. He had like Sean Kemp. Why am I forgetting? Homeboy played UCLA. Don McClain. It was like an all-star. James Moses. It was like an all-star team. They probably had the best traveling team in the country. You know what I mean? I played for the Orange County Express. We were like the number one team in California when I was in like the eighth grade. And I had Charles O'Bannon was on my team, Tariq Turner. We were number one in California. We went to the Nationals. We ended up finishing like 17th in the nation. But like, and then me and Chase, I met Chase at Superstars Camp in Santa Barbara. You know, it's an invitational camp. So we were like the two top point guards in our age group. And this was like probably like eighth, ninth grade or something like that. And Chase was, he was a nightmare. he was really like a nightmare. So that was like, you know, my upbringing was mainly basketball. I wasn't even into music. You know, I got into music through DJing. And really my dad used to throw parties with like Magic and DJ Reg used to DJ all the parties, and he would let me get on. That's really how I got introduced to DJing. So it was like basketball and music kind of were like hand in hand for me. But AAU was like literally my childhood, literally. That's like all my friends that I'm still friends with to this day. We all play AAU basketball.
So we're gonna get into the transition into music, but as a former basketball player myself, what was the difference between playing at North Hollywood and then playing for your AAU team? Because I know when I personally played for my different AAU squads, I had more freedom than when I played for my high school coach. And my high school coach would be more strict and kind of put the shackles on you where you didn't really get a chance to display your game. Because when you play AAU, you got all the homies you playing. You know, the game is just even more easier. It's fun. Y'all kicking teams ass. Like, it's a lot of shit going on. So what was the difference between playing AAU and then playing for your high school? Or was your high school playing for North Hollywood better than AAU?
I mean, I'll say like my high school experience, I had a great coach, Coach Steve Miller. Like, when I was in 10th grade, we won city, we won 3A. You know what I mean? So it was way more structured. Like, I feel like when you play, I mean, B&B Spurs though taught me discipline. Like, you know, you could not mess around with Coach Mike. And Coach Mike, like, if you didn't pay attention, like if he was talking and you weren't paying attention, he'd throw the ball at your head, like literally, like, and try to connect literally. So it was, it was like boot camp. So by the time I got to high school, when I got to North Hollywood, you know, I already had that discipline. It wasn't that much of a transition, but it was really more like running plays and really having more of a strategic outlook on the game. That's really like what I learned in high school, was like the X's and O's of basketball and, you know, learning how to think the game more. Both my 10th grade and 11th grade year, we went to the city finals. You know what I mean? We got killed when I was in 11th grade. And in 12th grade, we had a great team, but we got upset like probably in the semifinals, like right before we were going to go to the championship. So, but you know, the transition, I mean, it was just more structured. I feel like it was more structured. And I feel like my coach, I had a role, you know what I mean? A specific role. When you're playing like AAU, you can like you said, you have more freedom. If you can score, your coach gonna let you go. But like in our system, we had a system. It was like, you know, my coach loved Mike Krzyzewski. So he was like, everything was like, Duke, you had to play your role, you know, you had to understand the game and play within your system. So that was the difference, really, is just having a system more so.
Yeah, see, I'm a CIF guy versus the city. So, you know, yeah. I'm far east side. I went to Dominguez and I went to Compton.
Okay, yeah.
At Compton. So, yeah, over there. So I see you went to Morehouse. What made you make that decision to go play there out of all the schools that you possibly were recruited from?
Well, I didn't get recruited a lot. I got recruited by like BYU and like maybe like one other school. I just really didn't get it. It's weird because I really didn't get any recruit. Even Morehouse didn't recruit me. I walked on.
So you walked on at Morehouse. Okay.
Yeah, I walked on. My brother played and they won the Division II championship. I forgot which year it was, or they made the Final Four or whatever. And he played for the coach. So when I got there, they knew who I was because of my brother. But I was like, I'm just going to try out. And I ended up starting, you know, because the point guard was ineligible. He had bad grades or whatever. So I ended up getting thrown into the starting lineup. And the first half of the season, I was killing. We were like, our record was incredible. We may have lost like two games. And then I hit that wall. I hit that freshman wall. It was a wrap.
And it's a real thing. It's a real thing. My coach was calling me apple turnover. It got to a point.
Yes.
You know, you playing point guard, your assist to turnover ratio it just depends where you at too. Played in Midwest in college, and I had a coach that really loved his offense and wanted six passes and screenaways and all that. And our final scores were like 60 points, like, you know what I mean? Like very grit and grind basketball. Yeah. But, you know, it was to a point freshman, sophomore year, I'm getting ripped. My assists, my turnovers are up like high 3 to 4 turnovers. He's like, yo, Apple turnover, you're not playing. You know what I mean? Right. Like, we're going to put a better guy. So it really put, you know, some responsibility on me to like kind of dumb my game down. So like, I always get teased like, oh, you play like, you know, Yogi, Andre Miller. Because I used to be having a basic game. At first, I used to try to cross over like Iverson and do all that other stuff. But it got to a point I was showing it so much that guys with longer arms was picking me. Like at half court. Right. And I'm, you know, I ain't got the LeBron chase down block. It was a lay. right. You know, I definitely can relate to the freshman wall. So did you end up finishing up 4 years or did you transition into music after?
No, what happened was my freshman year I played, I finished out that year. I had a partial scholarship. They ended up giving me a partial scholarship. My second year, because I came back, I played in like, you know, the tournament at Cal State LA and like, you know, playing against like Burt Harris and all these other, you know, all these other top guards that were going to like USC and whatever. I played well. I worked out. And then I went back, and then they had another guard that they wanted. Even when I was a freshman, they ended up losing to like Virginia State or some school in Virginia. And he didn't get cut, but he decided to come back to Morehouse. So then they, you know, they put him in the starting lineup and they basically cut me. So I got cut. I was devastated. I cried for 3 weeks. Like I literally, but I kept, you know, I kept training. Like I was really, I was in shape. I lifted weights. I was ready to go. So what happened was like I started playing like intramurals and like just playing pickup after they would practice. So I was killing everybody because I was just in shape. You know what I mean? My jumper was ridiculous. And they asked me to come back like mid-season. Like by the time you know, it was like the hot, you know, Christmas or whatever, they're like, it wasn't working out with the point guard that they had. and they were asking me, you know, to come back. And I was like, I'm good. I'm straight. I was having too much fun at that point. I was like, I'm straight for, you know, and I didn't like my teammates. I didn't like my coach. You know, I just didn't think he really knew what he was doing. You know what I mean? And like,
so even having a D1 kickback, that stuff is real. If you have a higher level player that falls upon the campus, they normally get priority.
Yeah.
It always works out that way. Cause I came back to a California JUCO from Texas Southern.
Oh, wow.
And this dude was working out extremely hard all summer. It was his spot. And they're like, yo, we got this D1 kickback. His name's Trey Edwards. And the dude was just like, yo, but we ended up becoming really cool. But I felt bad because, you know, I just knew how I was. So I can totally understand. But to relate to the whole, I didn't necessarily cry, but I watched the politics of my career end in the D-League. Antoine Walker was brought in and I was waived in training camp. And he was more so a cash cow in the situation because his career was done as far as professionally, where he had won a ring with the Heat. He had some slumlord stuff going on with Chicago because he had bought all these tall buildings and he was managing them, but he was halfway doing it. He thought, he's a business major. I'm going to invest in this building and I don't have to mess with it. Well, pipes was busting and he wasn't like doing the business side of it. You know what I mean? He was hiring the homies that was doing halfway jobs. So he had to file for not bankrupt, but he had got some money issues. So on the circus side, he had to go to the D League. And it was crazy because I'm like, yo, I'm hyped because I'm thinking I'm about to play with this dude and I'm the guy that gets called in and gets waived. So I'm sick to my stomach, like, yo, fuck basketball. And I never picked up a ball again. And I went to become a teacher.
Wow.
But like, that was the end of my career because, you know, it let me know what the business was about.
The politics. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause I'm thinking like right before Sundiana Gaines was like one of the first feel good stories of the G League. He had got called up by the Jazz, hit a game winner. I'm like, hey, I can either get picked up by Portland, the Nuggets, or the Jazz, and I'm up next. Right. Like, this is it.
That's crazy.
This is my closest chance to make it to the NBA, and it ended right there. And I had a couple offers to go play like B-level, you know, overseas. But, like, how much did I love it after that? I didn't love it anymore. Being away from family and friends and stuff like that, I was tapped out. So now, even if I'm older now, so I don't even try to play it at all. I still could play. I probably would be better than most of the average dudes, but like playing against a guy, like I remember the hacks on Crenshaw and during the lockout season, we're playing against KD, Rush, JD, you know, James and stuff. And I'm just like, yo, I'm not on these dudes level at all. Like it is like, it's not even close. So like why I'm even playing myself. So I got out of that. But I know you mentioned about your transition into, you know, music.
Yeah.
Tell us about the party your parents threw where you met Dr. Dre.
Oh yeah. So so he and my sister were really good friends. So we threw her a party, you know, here because it's funny because I'm at my mom's house right now, but we literally threw a party here for her and she invited all her friends, like because I met Sir Jinx through her. I met Dr. Dre, you know what I mean? Like Sir Jinx was the first person I ever met, like a big producer that I ever met in hip hop, literally. And this was on the heels of like all the Ice Cube albums that he had done. You know what I mean? He was working on Kool G Rap actually when I met him. And so, we threw this party here for her. And then he showed up, Krista Glove, all my heroes literally showed up and they're hanging out, they're playing dominoes, doing whatever. Me and my brother were huge Dr. Dre fans. Like I had his mixtapes. I had everything he put out on vinyl. I had it. I was DJing at the time. And I just remember like, you know, he talked to us for like 45 minutes, just telling us like how he got started. And, you know, I was just telling him like, I'm a DJ. I want to be a producer just like you. And he was just telling me, you know, like how his mom wasn't really like down with, you know, him producing. She didn't get it. She didn't understand what hip hop was. She didn't know how big it could be. So, and he had NWA. I mean, he was like pretty successful at that point. You know what I mean? He already had like Boys in the Hood. All that stuff was already out, NWA. So, and you know, and there's stuff that Dre produced that people don't even know. That's just like local, just to LA. You know what I mean? Like even the CIA stuff before NWA, like, well, Ice Cube and Sir Jinx and, you know, JJ Fad and, you know, even Bobby Jimmy, you know, he produced records for Bobby Jimmy. So just growing up on K-Day and all that, you know, he was a local hero. Like he was already like my favorite producer at that point. So he was just cool, man. He sat, you know, he talked to us, and it's just funny that I ended up reconnecting with him years later, you know, and he remembered because of my sister, he just remembered me as soon as I saw him. And he told everybody the story of how I taught, you know, we talked to him and how I told him I was going to be a producer. And like to be in a room with him at that point, that was just like, I don't even know. Like that's just destiny or whatever. You know what I mean? I worked my butt off to get there, but he's literally like still to this day, like my hero, my big brother, my mentor, you know?
Yeah, out of all of the people that I've ever met, like celebrities or anything like that, he's been the most down to earth person. Like, it's such a surprise. So I met him a couple times, and he had the same energy. Like, he'll just sit there and talk to you for like an hour, and it's not, yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like he's in a rush to try to go somewhere else. He's
no.
Just like, what's up? Like, you know, and he's really just cool as hell. And I'm like, man, this is really like dope. This is how I would want to be about, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Dude, I mean, he doesn't even have to do all that. It's like, you know, and to the accomplishments, just, you know, but the thing is like, the thing about him that I've learned is just like, you know, he's the nicest, most humble guy, whatever. But it's like, man, he's no joke in that studio, man. Like, and that's where I really learned. But he has no ego. And that's the thing. Right. Is like, I can't have an ego. If I go into a session, I'm not coming in with an ego. If he's not doing it, I'm definitely not doing it. I think he sets the standard. He sets the bar. And that's what I love about Dre, man. He's always learning. He's still outworking everybody. He's still outworking all the young producers and the people that are coming up behind him, which is incredible. Yep. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So how did you and Chase start Self Scientific?
Well, Chase went to Canoga Park. Well, we met in Superstars Camp, and Chase went to Canoga Park. He was, you know, so he was living in the Valley. I was going to school in the Valley, but I lived in mid-city LA. So I was getting bussed out there, and because we knew each other from basketball camp, we just before games, like I had started making beats. I met a friend who had a studio, and I had started making beats. So I'm listening to my beats before the games, or whatever. So before we started playing, you know, against each other, we're in the same league. We were literally, he just started rapping. Chase was dancing at the time, like, you know, we're on some B-boy shit. So he, you know, I'm playing the beats before the game. He's kicking raps, whatever. So I invite him to the studio. I had already had a group called Soul Survivors that me and my best friend Rasudan, we had already cut a demo. And, you know, we were trying to be like the next gang, P-Rock, CL Smooth, or Gangstar.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, Rasudan kind of like took a break from that, you know, because he had other things going on. So me and Chase just kind of, we just really gelled, and we started a group called the Numbskulls. We were called the Numbskulls before because, you know, that was like, you had Rumpelstiltskins, you had, you know what I mean? All these different groups that had that kind of moniker. So we were on that. Yeah, like Far Side, you know, Chase had the Far Side, like high-pitched voice, like,
yeah.
You know, so we were making songs like that. And then we kind of like settled into, when Chase ended up going to Morris Brown. So when I went to Morehouse, he went to Morris Brown. He lived with me for like, I want to say like 3 months, you know, he lived with me. So we formed Self Scientific during that time. And we started, I was making beats every day in my apartment, and we became, you know, it just came together. And then we ended up getting a demo deal with Loud, and Nefertiti was our manager. And we worked with Diamond D. We recorded our demo at Ice-T's house. And yeah, it was crazy, man. It was crazy. But that, you know, that launched my career, literally. You know?
So Steve Ripken signed you guys?
Yeah, he signed us to a demo deal, yep. And it was through Bigga B. You know, it was through Chase's cousin, Bigga B. He was doing Unity. You know, he was bringing, like, Jay-Z out here to do shows and all kind of stuff. And he was really responsible for a lot of groups like Mobb Deep and Wu-Tang Clan, like, in terms of them breaking on the West Coast. He was the guy responsible for that. So yeah. Bigga launched our careers as well. You know what I mean? He believed in us. So he took us to Steve Rifkin. He was like, let's give him a demo deal. Right. We ended up not getting signed, obviously. But, you know, it was like that kind of like made us kind of believe in ourselves a little bit more, to where we're like, fuck, we're just going to, you know, we're going to do it independently. You know, so we started making our own cassettes, and then we eventually moved to vinyl. So,
Well, with the Lakers winning the title this year, I wanted to ask you, what was it like growing up with your pops playing for the Lakers and then the NBA, and just how that whole experience was as a kid, like growing up?
It's incredible, man. Like, you know, I always tell this to everybody, like, going to the Forum with my dad, like, my dad literally, because he was working with Jerry West, and when Dale Harris got the job with the Lakers, you know, he brought my dad along with him. You know, even though we're already living in LA, when he was working at Milwaukee, he was scouting for Dale Harris. So when Dale got the job with the Lakers, you know, they brought my dad back in, and he and, you know, Jerry West were super tight. So I would go to the Forum with my dad. We sit down and have dinner with Jerry Buss, Magic, you know, all his guests. Like, so it'd be like Jack Nicholson or whoever it was that night. Yeah. And then we go see Chick Hearn, and we go hang with Chick Hearn and say what's up. This is all before the game even starting. This is not even, you know. And then we would go watch the game. You know, we watch the game and hang out. Then we go in the locker room. So, you know, you're hanging out in the locker room with, you know what I'm saying, like Shaq and Kobe, and you know what I mean? So it's like, it's just surreal. It's surreal to be around, and they were young then. Like, you know, Kobe was young. He wasn't even Kobe Bryant yet, you know. And being around, I mean, I was around Reggie Miller. I mean, Reggie Miller was at UCLA, and Reggie Miller became a legend, you know what I mean, in the NBA. So,
yeah.
I mean, and Magic, obviously Magic used to come to our house and hang out. So it's like, it's just surreal. I mean, you know, that's basketball royalty, literally. And my dad, they love my dad. That's the thing. It's like, if we see Michael Jordan loved my dad. You know what I mean? It was just giving them props. So it's incredible. It's incredible to be the son of a person who's like a legend, and you don't really understand how much of a legend they are. You know what I mean? But my dad was, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, College Player of the Year. Like,
yeah,
you know, one of the only teams to go 30-0 in a college basketball season, you know what I mean? So,
right,
you know, he won a gold medal, like all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I've been around that my whole life,
yeah.
You know, just being around these legends, and the Lakers, that's family, you know?
No, it's very, you got a very LA story, you know?
Yeah.
It's like growing up in LA, man, it's, you either are probably connected to somebody who's famous, or, you know what I'm saying, in a family like that. Yeah. Or, you know, if you eventually come here, you do something to where you're going to meet all these people, and, you know, you eventually not get numb to it, but it just becomes a part of your life. And it's so funny that, you know, we tell a lot of these stories, and to some people who aren't from here, they think it's name dropping, or they think it's this, they think it's that. But it's like, well, if my dad is this person, my cousin is this person, my brother is this person.
Yeah.
This is just who my people are, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You just kind of, it's just part of your life, yeah. Literally. You know, it you get like numb to it after a while. But when I look back, it's like pretty incredible. Like how many people can say that, you know what I mean? That you've been around that, you know, I went to the, you know, All-Star game in Philly with my dad, when Kobe won MVP that year, you know what I mean? I was in the crowd when they were booing him. They were booing, you know what I mean? I was hot. I was pissed off. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, so I was just rooting for Kobe. I'm just a Kobe guy. Like, I, you know, because we saw him from a kid becoming like an icon, literally, you know? So when he passed, it's like, that was like, that piece of me is gone. Like, literally, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's
crazy.
It was like one of those things where you don't really realize how connected you are to somebody that you don't know until that happens. Because then I started going back. I'm looking at my middle school pictures where I had the, you know what I'm saying, the Crazy Eights on. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, all the way back then to, you know, just like remembering all the arguments with my dad about Kobe. You know what I'm saying? Us watching the games, like all of that, you know, like, all of the memories that you have with this person who's not even your friend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, I met him once. My brother was working for the Lakers. He was working for Phil Jackson, and they went to Barcelona and to London for preseason. So I met him at the airport before, you know, because my brother took me. And I just, I was so nervous, dude. I didn't even get a picture with him. I was so nervous. I didn't even think to take a picture with him. Yeah. But I, you know, I talked to him and he knew my music. He was like, yo, man, he's naming stuff. Like, dude, you're so talented. I'm like, Kobe Bryant's telling me this. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? I'm tripping. Like, yeah. That's when they had Powell and all yeah. that. It was, you know, they were already champions again, you know? So they were at, and it's just, you know, he's just a part of being a person from LA, literally, you know what I mean? That's a part of who we are at this point.
Definitely. So for you, musically, you know, you went from being a DJ to a producer. I didn't have the same success that you have, but how did you make that transition? How do you feel about how production and hip hop production has evolved for you since you've been a producer?
I mean, it's just work, man. I work really hard. You know, some people are, you know, they're gifted. They have a God-given ability. Some people were raised in the church and they have that kind of, you know, like I literally learned from DJing. I had to figure it out on my own. When I got my ASR 10, I figured that out on my own. I didn't read the manual, none of that. We didn't have YouTube. It was like literally everything I did, I earned, you know what I'm saying? And even like producing Self Scientific's first album, like I did the whole thing. And if I didn't do that, I wouldn't be a producer. I wouldn't be where I am today. So having that experience, like, you know, really helped me in terms of like how I produce records now, you know, how I look at music. But it's just the love, man. It's just the love. I feel like I'm always learning. Like, you know, I think that's the main thing. It's just like I'm constantly learning. I'm trying to figure like out what kids are doing now, you know what I'm saying? So I hang around a lot of young producers, yeah. You know, and you know, even guys that I've mentored personally, you know, they're teaching me more than I'm teaching them at this point.
Right.
So they're, you know, they're showing me like, nah, you don't use that 808, use this 808.
Right.
This okay. Yeah.
You gotta get with this kit.
yeah. I'm gonna send you the drum kit that everybody's using right now. So I'm hanging out with, you know, Mike and Keys and Dahi and Cardiac and, you know what I'm saying, Kenny Beats, like right. All these dudes are like, they're schooling me and I love it, man. It's really, that's the key of like of longevity, I think, is just like to continue to learn, you know. And I'm constantly studying. It's like it doesn't end literally, you know. And now it's like everybody, I was making my own samples back in, you know, I stopped sampling in like 2006, so I hadn't sampled a record since then. I made my own samples. And now everybody's making samples.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Everybody's making sample packs. You know what I mean? Like I was doing it because I was like, I'm tired of getting killed on the publishing. Like, you know, all these publishers were killing me. I'm getting nothing in return. You know what I'm saying? So I can't live off that, you know? Right. So thank God I made that transition. But thank you know God. That. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's like technology, man. Technology made it all possible.
For sure. I think I read or I heard a quote recently that it said like at some point in every man's life, he should be both a mentor and a protege.
Mm-hmm. It's true, man. It's true. It's like, that's what we took, go back to Dr. Dre. He's still learning. Yep. And he doesn't have to do that. Like he can literally chill, not do anything and be like, nah, I did it already. But right. he's still trying to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't stop, man.
Yeah. You know? How does it feel to have a song blow up on the level of The Man, the Allo Black song? And was it something that you felt in the studio, or did it, like, how did that feeling come about to you? Was it when the spin started going crazy?
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
It's just proof that like you have no idea when you're making something, when you're making stuff, like where a song's going. I had no idea. Yeah. My manager had a feeling. He was like, yo, that's the song. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't get it. I was like, I don't get it. I'm, you know what I'm saying? But my manager is like, dude, I'm telling you, that's the one. So, you know, that's when the Beats by Dre campaign happened with Colin Kaepernick and Kevin Garnett. They used the song in that, and that blew the song up. Like, if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have had a hit, literally. You know what I mean? So, like, Larry Jackson made that play happen. at, you know, at Interscope and Jimmy Iovine. And, you know, Beats was just obviously like the one of the biggest brands. It was like just as big as Apple at that point. Right. So it was like to see that. And then, you know, obviously the Super Bowl, and you had Richard Sherman, you had Colin. That was like, it was such a crazy story.
Yeah.
That like that propelled the song to like a whole new level.
So what's the story? Tell us the story so the audience can hear it.
Yeah, I mean, so we did the song, and like I said, like, you know, Larry Jackson, who was A&R-ing and John Amon, they pitched the song for the commercial, for the campaign, for Colin Kaepernick. And Colin Kaepernick had one commercial, Kevin Garnett had his own commercial, and then I guess Richard Sherman came like after that. But then like the 49ers and the Seahawks actually met in the NFC. Was that the play? Yeah, exactly. So that became like the story behind, you know, that became like the biggest story in sports. And then you had this commercial. So they're running that commercial like 24/7. Like you can't escape the song. Yeah. And that was the first that just showed me, like, at that point, like I didn't realize that you could a record could blow up and become a hit through a commercial like that. You know what I mean? So that was like, that really showed me that there's no one path to a hit record. I mean, now you have TikTok. TikTok is
blowing records up.
Blowing, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, there. It's like now it's unconventional. Before, you had to pay a radio person and you had to have these campaigns, these national campaigns to make a hit. But now it's
coming in such a random viral. You know, and it's crazy, people use the word viral so much, but it's like, it's viral a lot of times is more authentic than the other means of which people used to blow up records, like you saying, paying radio guys or getting, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Put your shit out, when it's like, when somebody just puts it in the background of a video that they, you know what I'm saying, doing a dance to, doing some little funny thing to, and then it just, now people hear your song.
You know? Yeah. Exactly. And it's like that, you know, and it's like, you know, you had music videos for that. Music videos would blow a song up. You had a dope video. Right. Now it's like people are making their own music videos for it. You know what I'm saying? Like creating their own moments, you know? So it's like, it just proved to me that there's no one way to like have a hit now. Like that's why anything can become a hit at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it really proves that like all you have to do is just create the music. Like if the music is a moment, if it's a great moment, it's going to work. It's going to work on some level. You know what I mean? Whether it comes from a commercial or a movie or whatever. I mean, even like the Childish Gambino song, Redbone. That's another one. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, on Get Out.
That was a moment. That was like a huge thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, that just proves that there's no one way. That old way of making hit records, that's kind of like whatever.
Yeah, it's done. It's dead.
Yeah.
Let me ask you too, who is your favorite producer or artist to work with? I guess you can give me one of each, because I know you collaborate with a lot of producers and making beats and stuff, but obviously you work with a lot of artists, you do a lot of, you know what I'm saying, albums and things like that. Who's your favorites?
Yeah, well, I mean, man, just off top, I mean, I have so many favorite producers that I love collaborating with. But Dahi's definitely one of them. DJ Dahi, Mike and Keys, Tariq Beats, Cardiac, Jake One. Obviously, that's like my brother right there.
He appeared on our show, and he also produced the intro and outro music for our show.
Oh, that's crazy. So Jake, that's like my boy. I talk to Jake like almost every day at this point. You know what I mean? But you know, we've collabed on the Wale, the Matrimony, and stuff like that. So those, and then Dre. I mean, working with Dre, you know, that was incredible. I know I'm forgetting people, but in terms of artists, man, I mean, I love working with Eminem. You know,
what's that like? What's the vibe like with him in the studio?
It's like, it's kind of intense, but it's like, I think the intensity comes from me, because he's intense about it, you know, just like how Dre is, you know, they're perfectionists. So you're dealing with that because they have such a high standard that you're just trying to understand, like, okay, you know, but I learned so much from them, you know, it's really about what you learn from them. And, but I mean, you know, it's songwriting, you know, it's really about the song. That's what I've learned with Marshall, is like, he just understands songs and he understands like production and what things work in the production and what things don't. That's why he and Dre are like unstoppable, because they both have such an understanding of that. You know what I mean? So that's what I've learned from him. I mean, honestly, man, I love working with Game, man. Game is like one of my favorite people to work with. He's so crazy. And like his sessions, the sessions that we've had are like legendary, man. Like literally.
I love the shit off of the second
album. Oh, word. Thank you, man. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so random. Like, he'll call me with an idea, like, yo, let's do, you know, let's try this. Like Ricky from the Red album, that was his idea. He called me from Australia, like, yo, I want to flip Boys in the Hood. You know, can you work on that? I was like, yeah, I got you. And I sent it to him. He's like, this is it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But even in the studio, you know, we'll do like 8 songs, you know, like in a day. Like, who? That's just insane to me. Yeah. You know, so every idea you come with, he's going to try to cut it, you know?
He's a rapper. That's
exactly. That dude. But we, you know, when we first started out, we didn't like each other. Like, he, you know, the first session we were in together, he didn't even know who I was. And he was rapping over one of my beats. And he came out the booth and he was like, yo, what did y'all think of that? You know what I mean? I was like, I think you could do better. Yeah. And he was like, who the fuck are you? You know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he looked up and I'm like, yo. And then he was like, fuck this dude. Like, he looked at his boy like, what'd you think? He was like, it was tight. I was like, nah. So after that, right, we kept running into each other like at the mall. Like everywhere I would, anytime I go to the mall, I ran into him, to the point where we started laughing when we saw each other, like literally. And from that point on, we've been like brothers. That's like my guy, man. I love Game. He's crazy. That's, you know, he knows he's crazy, but you know, at the end of the day, like he's a great artist, man. Like his catalog is pretty impressive, like really incredible. So he's fun. I mean, I love working with ASAP Ferg. That's my brother. I love working with Big Crit. I love working with Kendrick. You know what I mean? Like we worked on I did a song for Good Kid, M.A.A.d City, yeah. And you know, ended up being on like the Target version of the album or whatever. But before that, we were working on records with Dre, and like, you know, I got to see how incredible he was, and like working with him and Ali, and just trying to help them through their first album. You know what I mean? Through Good Kid, M.A.A.d City, that was crazy. So it's just so many, dude. It's so many people. I mean, I love working with Allo too. You know, just to name a few, honestly. Right.
So it's that time of the show where we ask this infamous question, and it normally goes, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Oh, man. I would basically say, and I think about this all the time, is to have, like, respect time. Like, have a respect for time, literally. Like, time is the only currency, literally, right? So I feel like you don't get that back. You know, you can spend money, you can make money again. You don't get time again, right? So, you know, my dad got sick my senior year in college. He had a stroke, you know what I mean? You know, I've had many tragedies, you know what I mean? Like just in my family, my grandparents, whatever, just every time is just precious, man. Like, you know, I know that's a cliche thing to say, but I would just tell myself like to respect time and like, and make the most of it. Don't, cause I went through a period where, you know, I was depressed or whatever. I put that all in my music, but you know, I had an issue I had a lot of issues, you know what I mean? So it was really, I feel like I spent a lot of time feeling sorry for myself. And, you know, I feel like if I would have taken it easy and not really have, you know, and just focused on having fun with what I'm doing instead of having this pressure, putting this pressure on myself, you know, I feel like I would have been better off, even though I did well, you know what I mean? It's just like, you know, I think it's just a matter of like respecting time, man. Like, I feel like all the greats, like I keep saying this to myself, it's just an observation, like all the great people that I know, they respect time, man. They don't waste a minute. When I work with Dre, they don't waste a minute. Even when we talk about Kobe, he didn't waste a minute, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's one thing that I have a sense of it sometimes, and then sometimes I'm not on it like I should be. And that's the main thing, is just to like have fun, you know, have fun and make the most out of the time that you have, you know, give it, like, give it your all. Don't stop. Don't ever stop. You know, that's really like, that's the main thing I would say probably. It's just like, you know, just really respect the time, because that's all we got really at the end of the day.
That's a damn good answer. That's a damn good answer. It had me even thinking about it. Like, well, shit, man. I'm a firm believer on time is currency as well. Yeah. You know, I was involved in a serious accident almost 2 months ago. So wow. To be for life to slow down and to kind of map things out of how things go, I just take it minute by minute. Yeah. And versus, you know, being arrogant to think that I'm not on borrowed time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So that's approach that I have.
Yeah, that's everything, man. Like I just, you know, I feel like that is just, you know, even having kids and spending time with them. I mean, that's the most important thing. You know what I mean? Spending the time with my wife, whatever. It's like, you know, you don't get these time. You can't take it for granted. That's really. And I don't think I did, because I worked my butt off, but I think like enjoying it while I'm doing it and really understand that I can do more, you know, I can do more with the time that I have. And, you know, did I really push myself? You know, I don't, you know, just having regrets, not trying to have regrets of, you know, what I've done with my career, what I've done with my life necessarily, you know? So, you know, as you get older, I feel like you just start thinking about those things. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, Khalil, man, thank you so much for
reaching out
to Jason, you know, being our guest. And this has been one hell of an episode, man.
Yeah, thank you. This is dope, real dope, man. I appreciate you having me.